mothers.
And others.
Popular music and parody.
Somewhere in the music industry, between sex, drugs and rock and roll and the Wiggles, is the rest of us. Music Mothers and Others is an audio parents group about popular music, a chance to discuss how parenting fits or doesn't into music industry life. During the series, we'll talk to people from across the industry: artists, promoters, techs, broadcasters, writers, academics, teachers, anyone who has a gig in industry, whatever that means. Your hosts are Liz.
Hello.
And Shelley. Hi, that's me. And we are industry veterans, academics and parents, as well as members of the broader village.
Our guest today is the very first academic we've had on the show, if we don't count us, Shell. This is Dr. Ben Green, and he is a Brisbane-based, now he says he's a casual researcher, but there is nothing casual about your research, Ben, and we'll talk about it. And he's a teacher in music and creative industries as well. He's also a member of what he calls two low-key but consistent bands that are mostly made up of dads. So I don't know if we call them dad bands, but we'll find out about that. So welcome, Ben. We're really happy to have you.
Thanks, Liz and Shelley. No, we have been called dad bands. That is a term that's been applied to us.
Let's go there. Tell us what they're actually called. Give us proper plugs before we then unpack whether or not dad band is a subgenre that's a good thing or a bad thing.
Okay, sure. So I'm in a band called Tape Off that's been going for about 10 years in Brisbane, and that seems to be long enough for people to use words like veteran and in recent years, dad band. And another band called Gold Stars that's been going only a few years now. And so I guess they're low-key in the sense that, you know, we would tour once or twice a year, put out an album every few years, and other than that, just sort of play as much as we can locally.
Okay. And is dad band, like, is that a term of endearment, do you think? Or is it a bit like dad jokes? What's a dad band?
I think we've kind of embraced the image now that most of us are dads. And so there are, you know, we do try to play and organise events that are family friendly. And for example, there's an annual festival that some of the guys in Tape Off put on called Sonic Masala Fest. And one of the most charming things about that is that we'll always play relatively early in the day, and there's always a huge host of kids there, and that gives a nice little flavour to this event at the Bowls Club. And then, you know, then the kids go home and we all kick on into the night.
Oh, there's so many things I want to ask you about that. And we have definitely got a question for you today about the music industry and about parenting and about kids and things like that. I think maybe we'll kick off with how you imagine your place in the music or creative industries. Tell us exactly really what you do. We've given you a little bit of a mini intro, but it can be quite different on paper, your description to how you imagine your contribution.
Okay, sure. Well, I'm an academic researcher and teacher. My discipline's sociology, and my main topic of study is popular music as a culture and as an industry. And so I research and teach in that at Griffith University. And on a more practical level, I also teach creative industries students, and I also do that at JMC Academy. And then, yeah, on the personal level, I'm a musician, I play in bands. And one of the reasons I think I actually moved into academia in my early 30s after a past life as a lawyer was partly so that I could make music a bigger part of my life, both in work and in personal life.
I'm going to leap all over that lawyer reference. My goodness. So you've exited, we imagine, like, the law profession to be a relatively stable and a staid kind of profession, to something that is precarious and unstable but yet creative and fun, a different realm altogether. What prompted that shift?
It was definitely – so I was in employment law. I was a union lawyer, and that was something I felt that I was fighting the good fight. I felt it was a really worthwhile thing. But I also, I feel like in some ways I've done things backwards, because I spent my 20s working long hours doing that. And then, like a lot of people I know at around 30, had the idea that it wasn't for me forever, and looking around for ways to scratch, I guess, the music itch. But also I was increasingly interested in academia. You know, when I first finished my undergraduate studies, I couldn't think of anything I would less rather do. But by that time, I was interested in research, I was interested in music, and I managed through sort of music scene contacts going, hang on, don't you do something academic? I managed to get introduced to the right people and they were very kind and welcoming. So I was able to enter that world. And yeah, you're right. It's definitely a lot more precarious. And that's the flip side of the flexibility that I was after.
Well, I guess that's the thing too, isn't it? Like you can go from being somebody in that world that probably doesn't get family life because of work to now where you might be very, very a part of family life, you know what I mean? And you're actively chasing that with the work that you're doing too. Do you want to tell us a bit about your research work and in particular, do you want to tell us about the dreaded document or are we going to move away from that?
No, definitely. Yeah, so I guess my passion project of research is something that I've just written a book about and I've just submitted the book to the publisher, Routledge, so that'll be forthcoming. And that's about, and it's called Peak Music Experiences. And that's my way of naming what I think is a common way that people talk about music and relate to music. It's about those musical experiences and memories that can shape who we are and define who we are, and they can tell our life story, and they guide what we do on an ongoing basis as well. And so I wanted to look at that, what I think is a way that people generally relate to music, and apply an academic lens to it and take it seriously. I'm Ben Green and you're listening to Music Mothers and Others.
Did you have any of those experiences, say, in your own childhood? Was there anything that really sticks out for you and, you know, that doesn't have to have directly sparked your research, although I imagine it probably did, something that you're happy to share with us, that a musical memory from your childhood?
Definitely, yeah. Some of my happiest childhood memories are thinking about listening to records with my family. So I specifically remember sitting in the lounge room listening to Alice's Restaurant by Arlo Guthrie, which is in some ways a comedy record, and just, you know, having a great laugh with my parents. But also, I guess, through that, getting an insight into the sort of, you know, 60s culture that it represented and that it came from. So, you know, that's something that sticks in mind, definitely. And then as I got older, also a very cool thing was, you know, when your parents start trying to show you that they were once cool, so they pull out some other records, Mum pulls out Santana or something like that.
Wow. Were you like air guitaring Santana's solos? Is that really how you got the bug for being in a band?
I think it very well could be, yeah.
Were you the kind of kid that rebelled against that though? Like, did you go the other way and just go into hardcore classical or something like that to rebel against your parents? If your parents are cool, then that's a bit of a problem, right?
I think the rebellion was more playing music, which was encouraged as a hobby. But when I wanted to get more serious about it, that was where it became a bit of an act of rebellion.
Yeah, ditching that law degree and becoming, you know, a regularly gigging musician and academic. Yeah.
Yeah, it only That's took definitely till I was rebellion. About
30. What about TV and music? I mean, were you a fan of a particular children's television show? Any songs from that? Liz and I are always talking about the Muppets on this show as well.
Definitely the Muppets. Education. Yeah, the Muppets, Fraggle Rock. But I was thinking about, and I think this might have influenced my sort of musical parenting style too, is there wasn't really so much specifically kids' music. It was more like I said, Alice's Restaurant or, you know, Dead Skunk or a big one for me was Melanie Safka, Alexander Beadle, which that's probably my earliest memory of listening to a record is Mum putting that on. And that's a favourite to this day. And a few years ago I took Mum to go and see Melanie and it was fantastic.
Oh, wow. That's interesting too, isn't it? We talk a lot about that, you know, is there such a thing as children's music or is it just music for children when you engage them? You know what I mean? Like that's all the other way around for that matter. The people that are still...
Song lyrics that are instructional that help kids go to the toilet or put on their shoes or something like that.
Yeah. Wash your hands. Anybody can wash your hands to anything now.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, they're all hand washing songs. My son Angus is 5, so he's at prep now. And he definitely comes home with songs, you know, Everybody Tidy Up. That was a really helpful one that I quickly put into our home routine. But it was, for us, it's always been more a case of, I guess he had no choice but to be exposed to our music, including my music. So it's, you know, without being a deliberate thing of trying to force it on him, it's just sort of always there, and there's certain things that, that he's latched onto.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I like Daddy, then Mummy, then my favourite persons in the world. I like rocket ships, cars, trucks, jutes and jeeps.
This one's for his daddy's birthday.
And planners and records for things. And my favourite thing is Daddy and Mummy. That's my song that I made up.
What is his connection with listening to music that you've made and working it out with that it's Dad that's actually playing? Because I assume that you've got releases that you just play at home rather than him seeing you in live all the time. So do you say, look, this is where Dad's playing this guitar part here? How does it work?
Yeah, no, that's right. We've there were definitely, especially when he was quite little and would be often in the back seat of the car and I'd be driving around and I'd be listening to demos or singing along with things. So he got to hear certain things over and over and over, and came to know that that was Dad's bands, that was Tape Off, that was Gold Stars. And there was always the routine of, oh, I'm going to band now. And he would, you know, be interested in the different play. He especially latched onto drumming, and the drummer in my band, Branko, he'd always talk about Branko. And sometimes we'd play act that he would be Branko and he'd be going off to band and he would kiss me on the head when he got home from band practice. Things like that. But sometimes I get really flattered when there's a song on the radio and Angus will say, is that you, Dad? I'll go, oh, yeah, no, I wish.
That's pretty great. And, I mean, I have to ask, even though it's terribly daggy, but Angus is not an AC/DC tribute, is he?
A lot of people think that, and that's pretty cool.
Wow.
But no, that was more a nod to the lesser-known Irish heritage of Angus.
Gotcha. Now, you mentioned a little bit earlier your musical parenting style. Do you think you could explain to us what that is? Have you actually stopped and reflected and actively thought about how you approach music or listening to music or interacting or experiencing or teaching music with Angus?
I guess I have reflected on it. I guess the immersion factor was always going to be there regardless. And it's funny, he's always, you know, all of the sometimes weird and wonderful and horrible things I've always listened to. He's always been very patient and understanding with those, and sometimes he'll quite like them. The one thing he ever objected to was Joanna Newsom. You know, just,
oh yeah, me too.
Yeah,
me too.
Within seconds, a harp starts up, and then a high pitched voice comes in. And he goes, "Daddy, I don't like this." I'm like,
me
"Mate,
too.
I was playing noise music before this, and that's yeah."
Love your son. I'm always happy for a bit of Merzbow or something, but no, no to Joanna Newsom. No.
Yeah, oh, so that's a funny one. And I've, you know, definitely, because there's instruments around and he's shown an interest. So whenever he's shown an interest, I've really tried to latch onto it. One thing that has been tricky is I always had this idea that we would do that more and more as he got bigger. And we recently came to the realization that our house was a bit small for us, I guess partly during lockdown, and we're kind of in the process of looking for a new place now. And that was one of the things that motivated that, was wanting to have a space to sit down with him and play music and record. You know, we've definitely recorded songs. He likes to make up songs. Where his own tastes have gone that I couldn't have predicted was football songs, AFL team songs. We kind of can't account for this, but Angus is a real big sports nut and a big football head, and that doesn't come from me or really his mum, but he's obsessed. And last year, right through the season, all he ever wanted to do was listen to and sing the football songs. He knows just about every word of every song.
I shouldn't tell you this, but you can actually buy a CD, I think, with all of the team songs.
Oh, boy.
And you could just have it on repeat, I don't know, put headphones on him and noise-canceling, sound-limiting, kid-friendly headphones, and he can just listen to them quietly and so the parents don't have to.
That sounds good.
We got a pride, our business. Memory, burn gold, we always fight for victory. Like soy and bears of all, Earth one and one for, we answer to the call. Go Lions, Brisbane Lions, we'll kick the winning score. You'll hear a muddle.
It's very interesting though, isn't it? Like Regurgitator's got that Music is Sport song too, and there's not really, like, if you think about it, it's all getting together, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's all bonding over something, you know what I mean? Getting behind a particular ideal and getting in there and having a crack. I often think that if, and this will lead into our next question nicely, but I often think that if the music industry was half as organised as the sports industry is in terms of different levels of participation for different age groups, we'd be so funded. Like if you think about how well, you know, just you've got football, for example, you know, toddler kickers, then you've got it all through school, then you've got, you know, and it's got nothing to do with all of the rounds and all the whatever. You don't all have to be in the AFL or the NRL elite to still be able to legitimately participate. And, you know, if music could get it together like that, imagine what we, well, number one, what respect we'd finally get, but imagine the dosh we could rake in. It'd be amazing, right?
That's right. Yep. We need to get organised.
We do. And that leads me to the question that we ask all our guests, which is, in your experience and with your expertise, what would you suggest needs to happen to the music industry and the creative industries to kind of make it more family friendly, or a place that is a bit more, not just, you know, for yourself as somebody who's, you know, a parent or a carer or giver, but also somebody who's raising the next generation? What would you suggest? What would you change?
Sure. Okay. Well, I guess maybe this is my labour lawyer background speaking, and the fact that I'm currently in the market for a home loan, but I think employment security is a big thing. You know, in our society, and academia and creative industries are worlds where that's a really big issue. So that's obviously a big ticket item. At the more personal level, I guess one thing I've found, maybe a bit of an attitude shift, has been some more recognition that people have multiple parts to their lives, that people are a parent, that they might have another job. Most people do. So that's something that maybe personally I've had a journey of managing to bring the different sides together. And it seems like people are increasingly tolerant of that and understanding. So being open about not trying to section off the parts of your life, I think that's probably good for everyone. But I'm currently, one of the things I'm involved with at the moment in research is looking at COVID recovery in the arts sector. And a thing that keeps coming up in that as a theme is that it's, you know, it's recovery might not be the right word. It might be more of a reset or a reinvention, because this is kind of all of these changes and issues that we're already facing, music as a sector, have sort of been brought to a head. And now there's kind of the need, as well as maybe the opportunity, to address all of those things. So that includes, you know, technological change, includes things like, you know, diversity and inclusion. I think governments just pre-COVID were finally starting to do some serious policy around music. So sorry, that's a bit all-encompassing, I think.
No, it's also, it's true. But I mean, let's face it, that big issue around stability, it also, it that everybody loses out there, because it just means then that, and it's a problem that's getting worse, because then it affects people who can't afford to be unstable, or less stable, even worse.
No.
You know, it's the big diversity problem for a start, you know.
That's right. That's one thing that I think in my dad bands, one thing we all have in common is most of us have, yeah, sort of left more stable work worlds for more flexible and more passion-driven worlds. But we also all have wives, significant others, who have stable, full-time, permanent work. And that's, as a casual academic, that's been crucial for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, wow. That's actually really interesting. Gives you potential for a different kind of work-home balance. I mean, being a casual worker has its pros and cons, but I assume it means that you're able to be there for the first year of school, the prep year, pick ups and drop offs, dealing with emotional changes.
Definitely. It wasn't planned, but I was when my son was born at the end of 2015, that month I had finished the fieldwork for my PhD, and also finished probably the last road-based tour that my band did. Then since he's been 1 year old, I've been, you know, the primary carer and generally been home with him a couple of days a week. And then last year, it was great that I was able to sort of put work a distant second, squeeze it into all the gaps and spend a couple of months just full time with him.
That's great, isn't it? It's also the other side of it is, and I say this as somebody who is a long-term casual too, that on the other side, it can go the other way where you feel you can't say no to things either. Because if you decide you want to go on a holiday, for example, or, you know, you get sick, he gets sick, that's the other side of things. Saying no to work can sometimes mean worrying that it won't come back again, which is tough.
Yeah, that's actually happened to me lately. I said yes to things and some of them turned out to be much bigger than I expected. So right now I've got a pretty heavy load.
We appreciate your time, Ben.
we really love it.
We're listening to music, mothers, and others.
So we want to know what is on the stereo at home at the moment. I mean, it can be, you know, streaming your Spotify from the loudspeaker function of your mobile phone. It can be, you know, listening, putting it on the radio. Don't mind. But what are the kids and I listening to? That's our phrase on Music Mothers and Others. If you can finish that sentence for us, Ben. The kids and I are listening to?
Angus's playlist, on which the first three songs are We Will Rock You by Queen, the PJ Masks theme song, and Streets of Your Town by the Go-Betweens. And these were his choices.
Amazing. Now, which one of those am I going to have stuck in my head for the rest of the day? I've got to think about it. Sadly, it's probably PJ Masks that's in my head at the moment. But
I've got the Go-Betweens in my mind because does this lead to discussion about place and Queensland and, you know, Brisbane and, you know, this song and this band, such a connection to place in Brisbane. Do you start having those conversations or are you ready to, like, debunk them right there and then with your five-year-old?
Actually, what happens with that song is there are dance moves that go along with it, and it happens to have, you know, shine and round and round and up and down. So they're all things that lend themselves to dancing. I think where it started with that song was in a really flattering moment to me, that song came on the radio and Angus said, "Is that you, Dad?" I was like, "Oh, wow, I wish." So I think that was how that one sort of entered the mix. But then another funny thing actually that happened with Angus's listening recently is his grandparents gave him the Beatles' Yellow Submarine soundtrack on vinyl for Christmas. And the other day when All You Need Is Love came on and it's got the fanfare at the start, he thought it was the Brisbane Lions theme song and he perked up and jumped up and started jumping around and then was disappointed when the actual Beatles came in.
Disappointed.
Oh, that's great. When the kids are disappointed that it's actually the Beatles, then you know you've done your job, don't you?
Dad, where are the Lions? Bring back the Lions. Who are these men?
That's it. That's awesome. Ben, thank you so much. We really appreciate your time.
Thanks a lot.
You're listening to Music Mothers and Others.
Same. I'm dead. Still dancing in your head.
Music, Mothers and Others, Popular Music and Parenting is a podcast written, presented and produced by Shelley Brunt and Liz Dufresne. Please listen to future shows and leave us a review if you'd like on the usual podcast services. It will help other listeners find our show.